What's up, everybody? Jordan here, back with another episode of the Fitness, Food, and Freedom Podcast. Today, we're talking about seven truths that I've learned about fitness. I've been in the fitness industry since 2013. November 2013, I got my first job at a gym, and that was working at the front desk, selling memberships, that kind of thing. Eventually kind of moved to personal training type of positions after that and worked as a strength coach at a university, as an intern, a GA assistant, and then worked online for the last 5 years coaching people, and especially with nutrition, writing exercise programs a bit as well. So been in a lot of different environments with a lot of different types of people, to say the least. And the seven truths I'm going to talk about today are seven of the things that seem very simple on the surface, but I keep coming back to these things. And these are the things that we oftentimes, as people interested in fitness or professionals in the fitness industry, there are things that we ignore way too often. And I want to try to avoid that and hopefully set you up for success by talking about these seven things. We're going to talk about nutrition type things. We're going to talk about muscle hypertrophy training, what that should look like. It's all going to be talked about in today's episode. So thank you for joining me. This is episode 470 of the podcast. And if you're watching this on YouTube, the Stoltz Fit YouTube channel, thank you very much for joining me there. Really appreciate you kind of taking the time to watch me talk into a microphone. That's really cool to me. And actually, the podcast views have been going up, although they're not sky high like the audio version on Spotify is, which is the primary audience, and Apple Music. Can't forget about you iPhone users. But the YouTube channel is growing as well, which is cool to see. And it's maybe a method of content creation that I'm going to explore a little bit more here in 2024. So be sure you go subscribe to Stoltz Fit if you're not already. Today's episode has no sponsors. I don't typically take any type of sponsors. Have before a couple different ones that I thought was a good message and good mission, but really it's brought to you by you guys and just your support of the podcast by listening, sharing it with your friends and family, subscribing to the other channels like TikTok Stoltz Fit, YouTube Stoltz Fit, this podcast on whenever you're listening it to. And if you are interested in working with me, to send me an email, jordanstoltzfitness@gmail.com is my email address for the fitness side of things. And we can work on a nutrition plan together. I can work with you on a training plan or lifestyle approach, however you want to do it. And I really appreciate any support given there as well. I always talk in the first part of these episodes, which some people might like, some people might hate, but I kind of think of it a little bit like a journal doing these podcasts, and I like to talk about my fitness journey a little bit, what I'm doing this week, things that are on my mind. Essentially, this week was a big one for the nutrition goals. Training didn't change a whole lot, but finished up a cut. So did a short fat loss phase that was about 60 days that kind of had Christmas as a break in there, right? Didn't really do much during that holiday time, but essentially about 60 days and pretty consistent through it, not ultra, ultra dialed in, but consistent nonetheless, pretty good. I really stuck to and leaned on structure during this cut. So for that last 2 months, I pretty much ate the same breakfast and the same lunch every single day for the entire time. I did swap out a few different things. So like if I had a piece of fruit at breakfast, I would swap that out for something different in the fruit variety down the road. Or if I had, you know, I had like a sandwich for lunch, was essentially the lunch, and I'll explain that here in a little bit. And I swapped out, you know, the type of meat, the sauce I put on there. You can kind of customize things. And that's really why I liked the meals that I picked. So what I did is I tried to hit a lot of protein between those two meals, usually about 100 to 120 grams of protein between breakfast and lunch combined, and keeping calories below 800 for each meal. So didn't want to get too far over 1,000 calories between the two. And typically what this was breakfast was non-fat Greek yogurt plain mixed with whey protein powder. So it kind of created like a chocolate yogurt mousse type of thing with putting a little bit of chocolate chips for some sweetness and crunch, and then would sometimes at the beginning have toast with that, kind of drop the toast out later, and then usually a piece of fruit like an orange or a grapefruit or something. For lunch, it was always a big salad and two sandwiches, which was, like I said, I rotated the meat and the sauces and whatever, but it's pretty basic, like roast beef or turkey sandwiches. I like those meals because I could customize them a lot. If I wanted to change up the fruit, I could change up the fruit. If I wanted to change up my salad, I could customize that without changing the calories a whole lot. It added a lot of flexibility for dinner too and dessert, which I prefer, is having more flexibility at night. It worked super well. Effective cut, lost about 10 pounds in 8 weeks, which is about expected for my level of leanness, and with Christmas thrown in there as well. Another thing I used in this cut a lot was what I call meal stoppers, which is essentially drinking calorie-free liquids at the end of meals to kind of stop it in your mind. You know, it's kind of that whole, if you keep on snitching on the food or getting seconds or thirds or whatever, or dessert, you know, having something like a coffee or an espresso or, you know, even a diet soda after your meal kind of in your mind serves like, you know, this is done, I'm on to the next thing. Sometimes I'd even brush my teeth at night and that would kind of serve as the stopper, a technique I like to use with all my clients to be able to just train the body on when you're done eating, essentially. What I did notice at the end of the cut that wasn't a good thing, although it was a very effective one, I did notice a little bit of sleep trouble, which I have never actually experienced in a fat loss phase in my entire life. You know, we have twins that are 9 months old now. They sleep all right through the night, knock on wood, but they do wake up early. So I was really starting to notice like they're waking up early, but I'm also waking up before them through the night a few times, tossing and turning, you know, temperature not quite right with my sleep, just wasn't great sleep. I could tell the sleep quality was down from normal. And I also noticed a lot more training fatigue. So not fatigue in the session. I had the mental fortitude to push through it, I guess. It was just that fatigue, central nervous system fatigue almost. It like carried forward more than normal as the diet went on. So like I would have a not intense volume-wise leg session, but just the fatigue that generated from doing compound movements made me really tired through the rest of the day, want to go to bed early, disrupted my sleep at night. I was tired the next day. You know, it was almost like I needed to deload constantly and definitely couldn't keep up with the normal training I do and had to scale back big time. So that was a negative thing. Because of those factors, I chose not to increase calories slowly coming out of that fat loss phase. So from the cut went right to the muscle gain. Calories went up about from about 2,500 or so to about 3,400. So a pretty good 800, 900 calorie increase, which made an instant difference in training, recovery, and sleep. Those immediately went away day one after eating more calories. And that kind of serves a lesson to me to watch out for those type of signs. So that's what I'm doing now in the gaining phase, hypertrophy training in the basement gym. Still a little bit too cold to go outside and work on some strongman stuff, so we'll hold off on that. Stick to a lot of the goals I talked about in an earlier podcast in January about goals for this year for me being 30 and all. So anyways, we're going to talk a little bit today about these seven different truths. Like I said, I keep coming back to these different things with clients. It's like, you know, these are basic things and you might see these outlined or scroll through this podcast a little bit and think, I know all these things. You might, and I do too, but it's a good thing to have a reminder of them and to always remember these are like core principles that are important and that everything needs to go through these seven truths. Truth number one, we'll dive right into it. Why not? Truth number one is literally what I do all day is convince people of this. It's that calories in versus calories out does work. This is science. This is physics. This is nature's law. Calories in versus calories out is how you determine if you gain or lose weight. Every diet that you can find out there, carnivore, keto, low carb, high protein, low protein, whatever, it's designed to help you eat lower calorie in some way. If it's meant to lose weight, higher calorie if it's meant to gain muscle. Everything's going to come down to the calories and protein to an extent. Calories are the main thing though. there is no workaround to this. Nothing overrides this. You might have the worst hormone profile in the world, and if your calories are dialed in perfectly, you can still make weight change. I see this all the time. Or the opposite, you know, you could have calories dialed in perfectly. Your hormones might be affecting things a bit, and you have to change those calories to get back in that proper calorie balance. But that doesn't mean calories in, calories out doesn't work. It just means your calories out might be different than you thought, for example. So it's very important to watch for weight trends, weigh yourself, take the averages, look at the long-term trends because weight will fluctuate, and realize that everything does come down to energy expenditure and energy in what you're eating. There are so many people, you might be one of them, who try to kind of find the magic bullet that works around this concept of calories. No, you're probably just eating too much. The thing that's crazy is that for most people, they stick to their diet very, very well 5 or 6 out of 7 days of the week, which makes it really confuses people because they think they're hitting things perfectly, but what they're not doing is hitting things on average perfectly. Maybe that seventh day, maybe it's on the weekend, maybe it's date night, they go out to a restaurant, think they eat 2,000 calories, they eat 3,500. Maybe they actually stick to their diet for 2 weeks straight and then have a week where it's a little bit off and they don't track as much as normal, and that ends up spiking their average calorie intake a bit more for the month. What matters is the averages. If you would be locked in a room eating the perfect meal plan to hit a specific calorie amount that was set for you metabolically to lose weight, you would lose weight no matter what else was going on in your body. So it is about calories. It's just about finding a way that you can adhere to those calories. Truth number two, stay with me here, is that even though calories in versus calories out does matter, it does come down to quantity, food quality and whole foods do help. And that's truth number two. It's very easy, especially when you're younger, and I'll say that now that I'm 30, I feel like I can give the old man wise advice. It's very easy to fall into the if it fits your macros type of lifestyle where you're fitting in candy, Pop-Tarts are the classic example, whatever else. There's nothing wrong with those foods. What becomes an issue is if those don't satiate you or provide you with the essential micronutrients you need to optimize your health and performance. Things get a whole lot easier when you do stick to a whole foods-based approach. The primary reason whole foods work better than processed foods, restaurant foods, sugar, and things like that is because they're harder to overeat and they're easier to track and estimate. For example, if you go to a restaurant, someone orders a, you know, lasagna or a complicated pasta dish, that's going to be a lot harder to estimate than someone who orders a chicken breast and a baked potato or a steak and a potato and a vegetable. The whole foods are often easier to estimate. They're going to fill you up more, so you're not tempted to go eat dessert after or snack when you get home or something like that. So it's very important to eat whole foods and focus the majority of your food intake around whole foods. Not only do they satiate you, but they do provide you with micronutrients, which as I've gotten more experience working with people, I realize are so important. A lot of people are missing they're having a lot of gaps in their nutrition, whether it's micros, vitamins, minerals. They are falling short in a lot of different areas that are making them feel low energy. Maybe they end up craving more because of that, or maybe they just aren't performing well in the gym because of that. Especially on the mineral side of things, I see this all the time. So whole foods can really help fill in those gaps if you eat a balanced diet. I eat processed food every single day. I have protein powder probably every day. I have some kind of snack or something that came out of a box every single day. So I'm not against that by any means. I do think, though, the smaller you make the food list you can draw from, the easier it will be to adhere to your numbers you need to hit to see weight loss or weight gain. Truth number three is that you do not have to do as much training volume as you think. Super common to see very intense workouts with a lot of sets, a lot of reps, a lot of exercises in a single day. It's that classic chest day. Bench press, incline press, dumbbell bench, cable fly, lateral raises, rear delt flies, tricep pushdown, skull crushers, abs. That's like a classic structure of a push day for a lot of workouts you'll find in magazines. I guess no one reads magazines now. Online, social media, the things people put out. You'd be surprised at how little you actually have to do to drive change. Something like 8 sets in a workout is actually a great workout if you're training hard enough and close enough to failure. You can make great muscle gain with that. You can definitely maintain muscle with that, probably with even less than that. I'd say more like 6 sets in a workout, maybe 4 to 6 sets for a body part. You could literally do 2 sets of bench, 2 sets of cable flies, and you're probably going to gain muscle on your chest if you're eating in a surplus. You'll definitely keep it if you're in a deficit. As an example. Now, that's not the workout program I follow. I do more sets because I enjoy it. I want the mental challenge, and I enjoy the pump, and more sets will get the pump. So I do more volume, but you don't need as much as you think. If you are avoiding the gym because you get really sore, it's really hard, you feel like you have to be there for an hour, that's simply not the case. You can make a ton of progress with not very much work, and I see this all the time. The hard part with that type of program is you have to be consistent with the boring stuff, because 2 sets of bench and 2 sets of cable flies isn't going to entertain you that much for 18 weeks straight. You're going to have a little bit of boredom set in. So you have to be disciplined enough to stick to that. The next truth, I think this is number 4, right, is that longer rest periods will benefit almost everybody. This was one of the things that I was kind of shocked by when I became a personal trainer, is how, well, it was how awkward the rest times were, unless you're really good at small talk, but also how much people didn't want to rest. Maybe that was because I was awkward at small talk when I first became a trainer. But especially women, not to pick on you guys, but women tend to not want to rest. They want to keep that burn going. They want to keep it going. And maybe this is also because I was awkward talking to women, small talk. But you need the longer rest periods to replenish all your energy systems. One of the first things you learn about in an exercise science class, degree, program is about energy systems, ATP system, creatine phosphate system, your muscle glycogen. You're learning about aerobic energy, anaerobic, and the whole point of rest periods is to replenish all your stores, let your body go through all the cycles it needs to build its energy back up so you can train just as hard with set 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. So the longer rest periods you do, the more strength you'll have and the more effective the work you do will be, for the most part. If you're chasing the pump, if you're chasing the burn, maybe not, but that's not necessarily going to automatically mean more muscle growth or retention anyways. So for everybody, at least a minute of rest. Most people will probably benefit from about 90 seconds to 3 minutes of rest between sets and exercises and even sides on unilateral work. So that is a big one. I like to use longer rests. I sometimes mentally challenge myself with some sets with shorter rests, such as higher volume squats, a short rest, that kind of thing I'll do once in a while as a mental approach. If I was just focusing on hypertrophy and fat loss, 2 to 3 minutes would be my recommendation probably for rest. Next point, truth number 5, is that machines are actually superior for hypertrophy in many cases. I'm definitely not against the big 3. I am someone who bench presses. I squat. I don't deadlift all that often. Once in a while, I'll go through a phase where I do. But I do barbell squat twice a week, and I do bench press once a week. And I'm a big fan of the barbell lifts, the basics, the free weights. I mean, I have a home gym, so most of my stuff is free weights anyways. But it's a very common misconception that these are the only and best movements you should do for hypertrophy. If your goal is muscle growth, actually machines are superior in a lot of different ways. The main reason machines are superior is because they provide stability. And stability is a huge component of hypertrophy. If you're trying to retain muscle as you diet, lose fat, or you're trying to gain muscle, getting in a more stable environment will allow you to really just recruit more muscle in the muscle you're trying to work, to put it simply. So something like a chest press machine is often scoffed at by people who would rather do a barbell bench. It's true you can load the barbell bench a little bit heavier possibly, which could provide some value, which is why I do it. But the machine chest press actually provides maybe a better hypertrophy response because of the stability. You're locked in where the handles are. They're not moving. You're sitting upright. It's very, very stable. Easy to overload over the coming weeks as well. So don't count off machines. That's something that I find a lot of clients think they have to do. Barbell squats. I get a lot of people coming in, for example, and they'll be like, you know I should squat. It's a great exercise. I read all about it everywhere, but I can only get to 90 degrees. My mobility is terrible. My solution isn't to just ignore the squat. It's to start working on mobility to get your squat better. But in the meantime, let's just do a machine that provides maybe a better hypertrophy response anyways, such as a hack squat, a leg press, even some specialty bars and things like that that could help you get down into a better position. There are workarounds, and that's the point of gym equipment, is that you have machines that provide the same stimulus with less of a learning curve. Point number six is that the basic movements like squat, bench, deadlift, even running on the cardio side of things, sprinting, jumping, these basic movements are actually skills you need to build, not just exercises. One of the most common mistakes I see if someone wants to lose weight is that they start running. I love running. I've been started to run in late 2023, nothing crazy, maybe 3-4 miles at a time, zone two style, and I like it. But someone who's really overweight and they start running will have a lot of impact on their knees, their ankles, their feet. And the truth is, even something like running requires good form, and you have to learn that form. You have to get better at the skill. Something in the weight room like a deadlift, it's a very skill-based movement, actually. Sure, you're just picking a weight up off the floor, but there's a whole skill to it. That's the reason there is strength coaches at universities, why there are personal trainers. You need to learn how to do the movements properly. The only way you can learn to do them properly and maintain that skill is by practicing. So I'm a big fan of practicing form in your warm-up sets, practicing form on your off days, going in with super lightweight, just the barbell, working on the movements like you're trying to learn a new language, like you're trying to learn a new hobby. Do these things all the time. If you're running, learn the perfect running mechanics. Hire a coach for that if you need to. It'll pay off. If you do it right the first time, you won't get hurt and you will make much better progress than having to relearn it down the road. The last thing I want to talk about, the last truth, is more of a mindset one, which is that a day or so, a few days here and there, won't set you back that far. It's all about, just like with nutrition, with calories, what you do on average for the long-term haul. If you are hitting your diet perfectly for 3 months straight, and then you have a two-week vacation, don't stress about that vacation. Enjoy the vacation. Sure, practice some good nutrition habits. Don't drink the entire bar. Don't eat the entire buffet. Hit some protein. Eat some fruits and vegetables. Be active, but don't stress about it. Just be a healthy person. Identify as a healthy person and do those things, but realize that a little blip in the whole calendar isn't going to affect your progress all that much. Nor does your progress mean all that much if you can't enjoy those things anyways. If you have to be so strict to the holidays because you're worried about a Thanksgiving dinner ruining your physique, what's the point in all this effort? Like, I mean, unless you're making millions of dollars off of your physique, what's the point? Are you happier if you have the meal, or are you happier if you don't gain a half a pound that day? These are the kind of things I go through all the time with clients too. It's a hard one to remember, even as someone who's advanced, is that you don't have to beat yourself up over a little miss here and there. Try to stack more wins than misses, and you will see success. The more wins you can get without as many misses, you'll probably see more success. That's just the truth. If someone is going out to eat every week, having a cheat day every week, and maybe they are, you know, going on a vacation every other month, they're not going to see as good a progress as somebody who only sees that once or twice a year. But the idea is that you don't let that get to your head and stress about it. It's not going to mess you up all that much. And life's about a lot more than fitness goals. So it's more about fitting your fitness into your life and not fitting your life into your fitness, is what I talk about all the time on this show. So those are the seven truths. To recap, we'll read them all through here off the screen. Calories in versus calories out does work. Eating whole foods does help. You don't have to do as much training volume as you think. Longer rest periods are better for almost everyone. Machines are superior for hypertrophy in many cases. Basic movements are actually skills you need to work on. And a day or so here and there won't set you back that far. Those are the seven truths that I came up with. I'd love to hear yours. If you're watching this on YouTube, list some down below that I missed or you have realized in your time. And I'd love to read those and see what your feedback is. Thank you for listening to this show, episode 470 of the podcast. More good stuff to come with Stoltz Fit. And I appreciate all you guys for listening. Take it easy, everybody.